back on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar. Another big article south of the border published yesterday featuring the Toronto Raptors. All these are prefaced the same way, which I find interesting. It's like the team that no one's talking about.
It's like everyone's it's like, talking about it now.
No, like you guys all, not only are you talking about it, you all use the same lead. Anyway, to talk about that more, we have Will Liu, host of the Raptors Show, and our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Will, the Charlotte Hornets are in town this week for two games, both played at Scotiabank Arena. Is this kind of like a no-win situation? Like, you got to beat Charlotte twice, right? Or it's not a good week?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I think they needed to look at the six-game road, like, homestand, and they need to, like, win pretty much all of these. Obviously, they got off to a horrible start against Milwaukee, shooting 2 of 30 from the field, which is, like, an impossible stat. Like, that's got to be, like, a trivia stat that eventually is going to win you, like, sports trivia one day, because shooting 2 of 30 to begin a game is just, like, impossible. And... my bad here.
Oh.
And yeah, you know.
It sounded lovely, whatever that was.
That was my alarm. I thought I was going to come on at 8:10 instead of 8:05. But, you know, what's going on, guys? Last minute changeup here. And then, yeah, the Knicks, when you know, to be honest, those are both pretty winnable games. Like, the Raptors basically needed this six-game homestand to be a six-game win streak. And so, yeah, you got to win all of these right now, because if you're going to turn the season around, like, this is, like, you literally need to do it right now, right? And at least they got one of them. We'll mm-hmm. see if they continue to win.
All right. So Justin says it's kind of like a no-win situation, but if they don't win, does that not help with the clarity of where this team is going, the direction that all the ESPN and big name guys are writing about, where they don't know where we're going to end up, but maybe this is the decision point?
Yeah. I mean, and listen, I think, you know, the direction of this team I thought was fairly clear. Just based on the way they were giving up on defense in some of the games in December, you know, when they were giving up 120 routinely, to me it was clear then. And then I think when they won on national TV for the first time this year, at least south of the border, with the ESPN game against Milwaukee, and then they lost in that, you know, exciting fashion, but also ultimately, like, I don't think anyone watched that game and walked away was like, wow, look at the Raptors. They were like, oof, look at the Raptors on that mm-hmm. side. Because, again, 2 of 30. So, yeah, I think the direction should be fairly clear. But then again, you know, I think at the same time, Masai and Bobby, throughout their whole entire regime here since taking over in 2013, like, they're pretty patient people. And I think it is still prudent, at least, to sort of watch what happens in the course of next month. I mean, realistically, like, trades aren't going to start happening right now. Mm-hmm. You know, trades generally happen closer to the trade deadline. So you do have this sort of built-in window here. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a busy time for them for sure. I know, you know, I think even before you make any of these sort of moves, I know this time of year is pretty busy for in terms of scouting and stuff like that. Mm. Because you obviously want to have a better sense of what's coming up in the draft before you make moves to anticipate for that draft. So, yeah, I mean, to me, the direction of the team is clear. But at the same time, like, you know, if they have a magical month or something like that, it could change what they approach it with. But, yeah, I think we know what's going to happen.
So the latest article that did make waves was from Tim Bontemps of ESPN. And I think the crux of it is that he lays out, is that the Raptors possess power. They are, despite their standing in the league, a power broker in that they kind of have the pieces that would set or establish the market. So I guess with the Raptors and currently they could go on a run over the next month, as you mentioned, I guess the future is still to be decided, but is the story of the season now how they choose to wield that power, whether they hold on to their assets, whether they trade their assets, whether the extent to which they're willing to deal those assets, just that power that they apparently do possess. Is that the story of the Raptors season?
Yeah, very much. Very much. I mean, it's unfortunate because you really would have liked to see the story of the season be that Pascal Siakam took a big step forward, or that Scottie Barnes took a big step forward, or that Fred VanVleet got back to all-star level. But realistically, the bigger story is that, right? I mean, I think the Raptors have to be pretty prudent here. You know, just because they won one game against Portland doesn't necessarily shift what's been going on. It doesn't hide the fact that they had a really ugly stretch. And yeah, I think, you know, thinking about the trade deadline, like the Raptors have some really, really nice pieces. To me, I don't think it would be smart at all to move Pascal Siakam. And, you know, if he were to be made available, he'd be the best player, you know, even on the market before the deadline. But I really don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think it's a smart idea. That's the Raptors' best player. They got to hold on to him. They got to build around him. But then again, I think about a guy like OG Anunoby, for example, who has a relatively tradable contract in the sense that a lot of starters can sort of, you know, piece together about 15, 16 million. Essentially, that's what it takes to sort of send out to receive OG Anunoby, and how good of a fit he would be on so many contenders. Like literally every team in the league is looking for a 3-and-D player, especially on the defensive end, who can guard pretty much all the positions. Offensively, he can fit in because he's such a good finisher. And if you want him to do a little bit more, he has shown the ability to do that as well. Although most contenders will mostly just want him to be in a 3-and-D role. That would hold a lot of value, and he's probably going to be the best 3-and-D player available. And if, again, like we've heard the reports even going back like a month now, where that if OG Anunoby were to be made available, he'd be, you know, essentially commanding a return similar to what Cleveland gave up for Donovan Mitchell, which was 3 unprotected first round picks, in addition to like a really good prospect in Lauri Markkanen, who has really flourished this year and is even in all-star consideration. In addition to, you know, Colin Sexton, who's a six man of the year type of player, and also the guy that they took with their 16th pick this year in the previous draft. So that's a lot of pieces. If you can get a similar return to that, I think you have to look, you know, hard at that. And of course, Gary Trent Jr. has essentially been identified as a trade candidate, you know, basically since the start of the season. And the whole idea there is just like, I mean, you're probably not going to be able to retain both Fred and Gary Trent Jr., so you probably have to choose. And, you know, despite how bad of a season Fred has had in terms of the shooting, I still do see the front office is more committed to Fred, who I think over the balance of his career has shown a more complete package in terms of what he brings to the basketball court.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I feel like OG is the inflection point in that, like, if you trade OG Anunoby, this is the youngest prime asset that you have that's in the trade market. Like, I understand Scotty Barnes, obviously, but like OG could be there for the next good iteration of the team for sure. But he's the one that might bring back the best package in that he is cheap and or relatively cheap compared to a Pascal Siakam. But if you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound, right? Like if you trade OG, are you not blowing up? Like, is it not scorched earth if OG is the one or one of the ones out the door?
I mean, yes and no. I do think that, like, you know, when I look at the Raptors, like they kind of need more pieces, you know, and I think they kind of need to take one big piece and almost break it down into like two or three pieces, especially that you can hold on to for the long term, maybe guys that you can develop a little bit as well. And I think that, yeah, it would be an inflection point. There's no doubt. Like, I really actually don't think the Raptors would even part with OG. I think Masai has really spoken highly of him in the past. But I think for me, it's also just one of those scenarios where, you know, it might just be that the price is right, right? Like, I think if you moved OG from the team, you would really struggle to continue winning at a sustainable pace, which is essentially trying to fuel the tank. And then, of course, if you get back that many future assets, like, I think it really does set up for, you know, the Raptors to restock their development system. I think that's one of the other parts of this season where, yes, it's been about competing, but the Raptors have always had like two or three guys just waiting in the back who are slowly developing. And, you know, I mean, I think if you really looked at only the positives, you might say, well, look, you know, Malachi Flynn shooting the three well this year, or Christian Koloko is, you know, I thought he had a really good game against Portland. But it's like, I think they want a couple more pieces and maybe in the pipeline too, with those additional trade assets that you get back, where you can restock like future runs, and then you can sort of like, you know, build for the next generation as well. Cause the Raptors are never just like all in on specifically winning outside of 2019. Like, they're always about development as well. I'm just wondering how they get those kind of assets to come into their system outside of their own draft picks. I think they actually need a couple more prospects.
So we got to ask you about Fred VanVleet, because over the weekend, our Michael Grange, as well as a couple other prominent NBA journalists, mentioned that Fred might have, or reportedly it was offered that four-year, $114 million contract extension. Obviously, this blew up on Twitter, and Fred went out of his way to actually address it on his own on Sunday without, you know, being asked or prompted. I just want to know where you think this lands in terms of not like legitimacy, but just the situation surrounding Fred and, you know, maybe his future, his exit strategy, or how he's viewing the rest of this season with the Raptors and then this potential or yet unconfirmed contract that was possibly offered to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that, like, Fred in the front office, like, met in the offseason and kind of generally talked about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and listen, it wasn't like a deadline. Like, the Raptors still have that ability to sign Fred to that contract, or Fred still has the ability to agree to that contract, like, literally today, right? Like, there's a... It's an open conversation, but the crux of it was essentially that, you know, Fred in the offseason was looking at, you know, the market, which obviously the cap is going to really jump, you know, in the NBA. Like, I think there was talks that, like, by 2025, it could be something like $170 million, which is just nuts. Mm. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, so you saw a lot of long-term deals signed for guys based off of potential, right? Like, for example, Tyler Herro was brought up. Mm-hmm. And he signed a four-year, $130 million extension, and that was going to be bigger than what the Raptors could have possibly offered Fred. Now, I think for Tyler Herro, like, he's younger, he's obviously still in the upswing of his career, and we're seeing that this year with Miami. I think he's taking a step forward. But the idea, I think, for Fred is thinking about, well, that's a guy who hasn't made All-Star yet. That's a guy who plays offense more in terms of just the finishing, and he can create a little bit too, but ultimately he's mostly a scorer, doesn't defend as well as Fred does, doesn't assist as well as Fred does, you know, doesn't have the other ancillary leadership roles that Fred has. And so, you know, I think from his perspective, he's like, okay, look, I could probably get that. Like, the only thing is I'm much older and maybe I don't score as well. But then, of course, you come into the season and then you have this kind of like nightmare year, right? Where, like, he's consistently talked about as, wow, Fred's got one of the worst field goal percentages in the league. And that's not the only thing that you can really define his career by, or that's not the only thing that he does. But at the same time, like, that is obviously something you would never want to see in a contract year, especially when you think about the fact that the Raptors have also essentially, I mean, I would say they reshifted his role, but realistically, they demoted his role as well, right? They came into the year, they were like, hey, Fred, we're going to make you play off ball a little bit more, right? We want to give extra ball handling reps to OG Anunoby, to Scottie Barnes. And of course, we want to see Pascal continue in that fashion. And so essentially, like, they're moving him to a new role. It's a lesser role. And then, of course, he's also waiting on this bigger payday. So it did become kind of awkward. I'm not going to lie. It is fairly awkward. But at the same time, I do believe what Fred is saying, which is that he doesn't want this to be a distraction. He really wants to really focus on getting this team back on winning ways. Ever since he's been here in Toronto, you know, the standard has been very clear. Like, obviously, he's won a championship, but he's also won a ton of regular season games as well. And yeah, I do see him as committed to sort of turning that part around. But at the same time, it's like with anything else on the team. Like, if they play better individually, both as, you know, as players or even collectively as a team, then that's where you might see the team actually hold it together and then continue to pay these guys. But right now, it's, you know, as hard of it is to say about a guy who's committed a lot to the franchise, but it is also kind of like a show me kind of thing, right? Like, you have to turn your season around, get back to that all-star level that, you know, he showed last year. And then I think the Raptors would pretty happily re-sign him, right? I think they see him as a big piece, but he also can't be like one of the worst field goal percentages in the league. Like,
no, it's funny because if let's say someone in the NHL or the NFL made the same, maybe it's a miscalculation right now for Freddie in that he didn't want his current contract to affect his next. He wanted to make sure market value. He wanted to make sure maybe he gets paid more than Tyler Herro. Like, if you make that mistake in a different league, it could have dire, dire consequence because your price and your value can drop off the table. But you laid it out. What's the salary cap going to? $175 million? Like, it's really, really hard to make a mistake, at least it seems, as a player in the NBA. And despite the struggles, it seems like the chance is still going to be there for him to sign a contract, just maybe not with the Toronto Raptors based on maybe what is a relationship that could be or at least is being tested at the moment. What I wonder what you made of his appearance on JJ Redick's podcast. It almost felt like to me he was trying to let everyone know, and by everyone I mean the basketball world, know that these are the reasons for his struggles and that he's still this type of player.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, he's essentially said this like a couple of times now. Obviously, JJ Redick was, you know, the biggest platform. But I even remember like going down to practice on Boxing Day, and it was like just a scrum. And I asked Fred the same kind of deal, and, you know, he gave the same answers. And, yeah, I mean, look, I think part of it comes from his confidence as a player, right? You absolutely need to maintain your confidence. You're not just come out and say, like, yeah, I'm washed. You know, like, I would hate to hear that, especially for a guy who's made it this far in life just based off of confidence and obviously hard work. But, yeah, I mean, I think that there is some merit in that, you know, because I think the overall numbers, when you looked at it, it was like, well, you know, Fred, like, your usage rate is like pretty much the same as last year. You're taking one less shot than last year. You're playing like the exact same minutes. Like, what is specifically the step back? And, you know, when I looked more into it, and this was just, again, this was just the starting five, you know, when he's on the floor with Gary Trent, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, and Scotty Barnes, Fred VanVleet's usage rate is like 12%, which means that like he's using one in every six possessions, or one in every eight possessions really with the starters, when, you know, it should be closer to one in five. And so maybe in that sense, that's what he's talking about in terms of deferring on the role. That is only like maybe almost 200 minutes in like a season where he's played over 1,000. So that's only a small fraction. But at the same time, like I do kind of understand, right? Like it was pretty clear to me that like they shifted the role of sort of ball handling and creation to a lot of their wings. And I think if you're looking at it from Fred's perspective, you're like, okay, so I've made this change, you know, and we've done this collectively. Did that result in more wins for us? Right. And the answer is kind of no. So when you're sort of like shifting away from this formula that worked better last year, and it's sort of hurting his individual numbers, and it's maybe like not working well for the team, I think that's where you might sort of like push back on it a little bit. But ultimately, look, I actually do think the Raptors are in a good position, like in terms of moving away from sort of Fred handling point all the time. But at the same time, it's the same deal. Like, I need Scotty and OG to show me. Like, on nights when Scotty and OG are particularly effective as creators, then yeah, I want Fred to just be the point guard and just chill and sit off ball. But if they're not effective as creators, then I need Fred to take over a little bit. You know, it's like that with anything else. But I think, again, to me, it shows that like Fred's actually pretty willing to buy into the team concept, even in a year where he's in a contract year. So
let's talk about Scotty then. I feel like it's easy to pick that moment between him and Thad that we both thought was just kind of, you know, a small factor. It happens all the time. People can hold each other accountable, whatever. But it seems like maybe the vibes have been a little bit lower. Maybe they're turning around with a win. But Scotty's play has been inconsistent. Of course, maybe there's a little bit of a turning the corner when he strings together some consistency. But what do you think has been plaguing Scotty throughout the season? And how much of that weighs on him mentally as well? And was that a sign of a little bit of frustration and maybe a little bit of immaturity in a second-year player that's still trying to get in his own groove here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is like half of the Raptor show every day at this point is just what's going on with Fred and what's going on with Scotty. Mm-hmm. So this is good in preparation for 2 p.m. today. what's going on with Scotty this season? So I think, look, you know, you're essentially asking this 21-year-old to be a pillar of your franchise, like one of the main pillars, right? Especially when the offseason comes around and it was like, hey, KD's available, but, you know, the Raptors make Scotty untouchable, right? And not anyone else, just Scotty, right? So it's like you're really making this thing about him. And of course, after he wins Rookie of the Year, that is like a logical conclusion to come to. But at the same time, I think they sort of expected him to take on a bigger role, especially obviously with Fred moved to a lesser role. And it just didn't necessarily click, right? I think maybe the patience sort of wore out a little bit when Pascal went down with injury. And you look at that stretch and you're like, okay, we need Scotty to really turn it up on that stretch because Pascal missed like 10 games. And outside of one of those in against Atlanta, like it's just he wasn't really like the primary driver, right? And I think that that's normal, honestly, for a younger guy, like who I think in terms of the shift to point guard is a little bit early for him just because he doesn't break people down that consistently on the perimeter or use screens and stuff like that or shoot that well, right? That's just not a lot of skills that, like, right now to be a traditional successful point guard, you need to sort of see. But at the same time, I think the Raptors have a pretty successful role for him, which is what they used last season when he won Rookie of the Year, which is essentially having him play in this like mobile point center kind of role, right? And that's not to say that he's backing guys down each time. But I think when he's setting screens, when he's initiating dribble handoffs, when he's pushing the break against a slower guy, you know, he has a lot of advantages and he's able to contribute to the game. And I think that's what we're seeing of late now, too, because ever since that game against Philly, where the Raptors lost in overtime when Pascal had like 38, you know, he's been playing center fairly consistently. And I think it's actually brought a good degree of sort of engagement to his game. And I think that's the bigger thing, is just like, as one of the pillars, as one of the main guys, you just need to be on every single game, right? And so there's like a frustration when it's like, well, for three quarters, he hasn't really looked at the rim. And that's happened a couple of times. But I think he's actually kind of growing out of that. I feel like his defense has really picked up ever since playing center. I think I've been pretty happy with his defense in the last like 10 games or so. He's gotten big assignments as well, big stops. And yeah, I think it's part of like, I mean, you rely on a 21-year-old. You're essentially banking on, you know, riding through some inconsistencies, because even though he won Rookie of the Year last year, like I don't think that like that meant this year was going to be completely smooth sailing, right? I think you still needed to build on that skill set, find a way to sort of use him. And I think they tried one way at the start of the season. It wasn't really clicking. They're using him in a different way this year, you know, for the last month or so. And I think it's actually working decently. You know, you wouldn't know it necessarily by the results of the wins and losses, just because there's so many other issues. But, you know, I think they're actually performing a lot better with him in this positional change. I think it's made it easier for him as well. Like that Portland game, he's just, a lot of it was rolling the basket, you know, making the next pass out for threes, which he did twice in crunch time, getting on the offensive glass, which has been a really, really big part of his game that's sort of come back around now that he's playing closer to the rim. And, you know, I think it's made it a little bit easier where he doesn't have to necessarily break down a guy on the perimeter, then get into the paint every single time, then kick out or finish at the basket. Like, that stuff is probably going to come, and I think that that takes a lot of offseason work to get to. But ultimately, they found something that works with him right now. And yeah, in terms of the frustration, I mean, look, listen, it's things spill over, but I think that the focus is still the same. It's really been the same message. Like, literally, Masai went down to give him hard truths, right? What do you think that's really about? It's just about, like, you know, being super engaged and playing both ends as hard as you can for the full four quarters, you know. And I think that, you know, Nick Nurse has talked about how much, like, you know, Scotty's got to grow with the job professionally. After the first year, it was exciting. Second year, you got to grow with the job professionally, right? These are all things that have already been reported, or in Nick's case, he said out loud to the media. And then you've heard, obviously, you know, the tone from the veterans. Essentially, it's just like, hey, we're going to work with you. We're going to support you. But we're also going to try to, like, remind you when it sort of comes out of line. And I think that's whole, the whole idea was just, like, just stay focused on the game. Now, you know, honestly, I think, you know, when you look at the whole situation, it probably shouldn't spill over to the court like that. Like, that reminder can be made in a more gentle way. But ultimately, I think when you have to make that reminder a lot of times throughout the season, maybe you lose a little bit of patience when you are the vets. Ultimately, though, I think the bigger thing is he played really well throughout that Portland game. I thought that was one of the games where he actually played very effectively for the full four quarters. And, you know, this is just part of raising a 21-year-old. I think we're just seeing, like, almost like parenting happen on a basketball court sometimes.
All right, Will, I'm going to conclude my one question survey of notable Raptors people with you. If you eliminate the context of the Toronto Raptors, so the championship, the future, the culture, everything that goes into it, Masai Ujiri running a teardown, start it from scratch, rebuild, does that pique your curiosity at all?
It does, only because I don't think I've ever actually seen him do it in his career.
Yeah.
You know, like, he literally started in Denver and he traded Melo, but that team started winning right away. And then they just won consistently. And then he came to Toronto. He trades Rudy Gay. He was intending to tear it down, but the Raptors start winning. And ever since then, the Raptors has just been winning, right? I think if you look over Masai's, like, I don't know how many years he's managed, like 12 or 13 years, he might only have like one losing season, which was the Tampa year. So, it is intriguing because it would be a first.
Be a lot to talk about. It might get, you know, it might be better than talking about what's wrong with Scotty Barnes every day, but there would be some lean years.
This poor kid.
It would be a long, long path back towards relevancy. But, like, yeah, I'm kind of with you. If he is who we think he is, I'd like to see him start from scratch. It would be interesting. Will, yeah. We appreciate you getting up. We appreciate you coming on and the insights. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
All right, thank you.
That was Will Liu, host of the Raptors Show, 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com.
You can always catch Raps and Hornets tonight at 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And then always Raptors Reaction Podcast with Will Liu after the game. It's always great to listen to that. He is so insightful and in depth with his breakdowns. I mean, I listen and I learn so much even after watching the game. I usually listen on our drive to work in the morning, which is really nice. So you can always check that out and wherever you get your podcasts. And that's Will Lou, and also at 2 o'clock on the Raptor Show.
Get some JT Miller vibes from Fred.
Oh.
You saw JT Miller's quote where he's like, I'm not putting up numbers because I'm doing everything right defensively. That, it's not the same. It's not the same. But Freddie's like, yeah, my role has changed and this is connected to that. And I get it. Like, you, I love what Will said. Like, you don't want him to say he's washed.
No.
Of course he's not going to say that. And I guess he's providing rationale for why things have been a bit of a struggle. But I guess, I don't know, JT Miller's already painted himself into someone we make assumptions on based on what he says. So Fred gets a little bit more grace, but there it's kind of cut from the same cloth in a way.
Well, we got an opportunity to see Raptors at home tonight and Thursday and Saturday and then away on Monday. So they got a little homestand here. Hopefully we get a little bit more clarity, as we said, and as Will said, it's a really important stretch for the Toronto Raptors. So maybe you're betting on them tonight. You can send that in for the Wake and Rake at 590, 590. We'll do that after the break. We have a couple more of our Leafs awards to hand out. If you missed the 6 o'clock block, go back and listen to the Fan Morning Show podcast, wherever you get your podcast. We were doing the midseason check-in, officially at the halfway point of the Leafs regular season, 25-9-7, right in the middle of the year. We did some midseason report cards. Previously, we had done the quarter report cards. We are kind of reflecting on improvements and decline in some of the areas of the Toronto Maple Leafs roster. And then, of course, midseason awards, who we'd be handing out MVP, most improved, the Nick Ritchie Memorial Award. Nonetheless, we have lots to hand out still. We have some midseason awards after the break. And, of course, the Wake and Rake. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
All right, it's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's the Wake and Rake. But before we get into the picks, we were picking our awards for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we ran through most of them. MVP, Most Improved, Most Underwhelming, aka the Nick Ritchie Memorial Award, and the Unsung Hero. And we got four left. Best moment of the first half, Justin Cuthbert.
Okay, the best moment of the first half, I think, is Mitch Marner in general reacting to his own success, I think, was the funniest fun moment of the first half. And most specifically, when he said that the music was really loud in there when he was starting
his
interview. He was just like, this guy could not contain his excitement. I think I think that was the most enjoyable, best moment of the first half, was just how much he enjoyed the success he was having.
Mine is adjacent to that. I would say more in a fact of the point streak in general, the way that this community, the arena, the fans, the players, the media just dove into it, like took a big bite out of Mitch Marner's point streak. It was one of the most
biggest bite.
It was we were something to chew on. We were hungry on that one. It was really fun to follow. As someone that's at the games, it was electric the second that he got a point. It was just something really joyful in this community. Across the league, I think it became a big storyline as well. That was probably the best moment of the first half. And then on the other side of that, when he said, they're trying to put shambles in our brains.
Yes.
Two different vibes of Mitch Marner, but he was definitely the story of the first half.
Put Marner in front of a mic and entertaining things seemed to happen.
Okay, second award, or next award, best roster addition during the first half.
It's got to be Pontus Holmberg. It's got to be. He's won a couple awards already, so I won't detail it too much. But he's stabilized the middle of the ice in a way for the Maple Leafs. They were looking for that center. They were looking for that fourth option up the middle. They were searching till they called up this, this lesser known prospect, and now he's really, really given them some stability at the bottom of the lineup. And of course, the strength of this team is through the middle of the ice, and has been and continues to be, with Pontus Holmberg giving them good fourth line minutes.
And the cheapest forward on the roster, earning every penny, and even more so. So I've really liked his addition as well. I know Kipper and Bourne are big fans of him as well. The push for Pontus, get him in the All-Star game. We can start championing that as well.
He's one of those guys where it's just like, if he's on, he's got like a magnetic force where it's just the puck is always going in the direction he's trying to steer it into, which is like a weird thing that you can't quantify and you can't like replicate and you can't coach, but it seems like good things are happening and he's staying in the right position when it's, as it pertains to the puck, which is a great thing for a middle or a bottom six center.
Okay, two more here. Most underrated storyline of the first half of the Toronto Maple Leafs season.
It's hard to have anything underrated in Leafland.
You mean we didn't talk about everything to the highest degree of...
I mean, if it's good, we're going to bet to highlight it.
Even if it's bad.
And we've been highlighting Mark Giordano all season, but I think his statistical dominance, even that we're sleeping on. Like, if you look at his numbers, if you look at his underlying metric portfolio, it is unbelievable. His numbers are fantastic. And I feel like, yeah, he's been great. He's been one of the MVPs of the first half. But just the way that he's dominating, if you look at the numbers, I think is slightly being slept on.
Yet you bashed my selection for him to be the unsung hero.
I didn't bash.
Yeah, you didn't agree with it.
I don't know if that's accurate. We'll have to check the
tape. You pushed back on it. I had to sell you on it.
I was just playing devil's advocate.
Okay. Mine was tough because, as you mentioned, we talk about everything. But Connor Timmins, as of late, and his addition to this team, basically for nothing, too. So think about some of the roster additions they've gotten for basically nothing. This was a great value find. Curtis Douglas out the door. See you never. I think he's...
Yeah, until he's mopping the floor.
Yeah, he'll score four goals against the Leafs next time he plays. I just think he's been a really good, great addition. And it's taken the load off needing a Mete or a Ben consistently in the lineup. And I think I'm just becoming a Connor Timmins fan. So a little bit of an underrated addition in terms of what was given up for a guy that could be an actual contributor in this Leafs defense for the rest of the season and onwards. So final one. This is a good one. The most overblown narrative of the Toronto Maple Leafs first half.
Okay, underrated and overblown kind of connected here. I think the Giordano dominance maybe not as strong. I think the overblown narrative on the flip side of that, though, is just how dominant TJ Brody has been outside the Morgan Rielly minutes. Yes, he has been. TJ Brody's been the fixer, as we mentioned. He's been unbelievable. He's been just as important as Giordano, just as important as pretty much anyone on the roster. However, I don't think that just because we have these small samples bookending the season right now with Brody and Rielly playing together, that Rielly and Brody can't work in the future, that Rielly isn't a great defenseman, that Rielly can't be a productive player on this team. Most of their minutes, which, again, have been relatively unproductive for the Maple Leafs, at least in comparison to what the other pairings have done, came early on when things were really, really not going well. I think Rielly and Brody were playing a different game the first 2 weeks of the season, where Rielly was just like, he was activated all the time. He was told to chase pucks. He was told to do all these things, activate. I think they grew a bit of they dug themselves a little bit of a hole from a statistical standpoint. And now they don't look as sharp coming out of Rielly's injury. I do think they'll settle down, though. I think it's a little overblown that Rielly's not working, that Brody is worse with Rielly on his pairing. I think they'll be fine.
Okay, so mine's similar. Most overblown narrative was how the Leafs will survive without Muzzin and Rielly in their lineup. We talked about this. We were so worried that Leafs needed to add a defenseman right away. How are they going to survive this season without two of the biggest names on their back end? But it was overblown because everybody stepped up. Everybody elevated, not only the defense, but at that stretch, we saw the goaltending playing out of their minds. We saw the forwards really dialing on defensively and changing their game plan. Sheldon Keefe, you know, really focusing on structurally changing the way that the defense worked here, and the Leafs dialed it in, and it became an overblown narrative.
I like that overblown past tense. Like it's gone.
Yeah.
That was that.
100%.
We missed the mark on that one for sure. There's no speculation.
And that's a good thing.
It was a mistake to assume that they'd fall apart without them.
It's still time, but this is the first half check-in point. Another one was the goal song. Overblown. Let's stop talking about it.
Okay.
Overblown narratives. Okay, so that was our full first half awards. You can go back and listen to the first half at the 6 o'clock block. We also did grades for your Toronto Maple Leafs. We did forwards, defense, goaltending, coaching, special teams, and core four in-depth contributions. All of that at the top of the show. Go and check the podcast feed if you want to catch up and check our grades and how they change from the first quarter of the season. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into the Wake and Rake. Tonight we just have Raptors and Hornets on home court here. No other Toronto-centric sports, but you have NBA and NHL to cycle through for your Wake and Rake suggestions. Do you want to go first, Justin?
I can go first. I don't really like my selection tonight. I couldn't find
great.
Anything.
Feel super positive about this.
Just give me a chance here. I don't like anything in the NHL. Nothing in the NHL really popped except Seattle minus 105 in Buffalo.
Okay.
Both of these teams played yesterday. So I think I'm more confident in Seattle because they've been playing so well. Buffalo played really poorly, or at least got a poor result against mm-hmm. Philly yesterday. But because these teams, one's at the end of a long road trip, a second half of back-to-back, the other one played last night as well. I'm not sure if it was a traveling back-to-back or not. I actually think it was. Either way, I think it sets up to be error-filled.
Like
Buffalo
that.
Is our over team. Seattle's been scoring goals at a really impressive rate lately. Instead of taking Seattle as the road technically dog, although it's minus 105, I will just take the over 6.5 at minus 120.
I really
expecting
like
that these teams just kind of, you know, aren't as sharp, but are playing hard. One wanting to end a road trip really, really well. The other one wanting to rebound from a difficult loss last night. I think we see some goals because we normally see goals from these teams. And I think the incentive will be there as well.
I absolutely love that. The
Thank
Sabres.
You gave me a chance.
Yep. The Sabres are feeling evil.
Although they were wearing the evil jerseys last
and
night.
And how'd that go?
And it was,
so they need a bounce back. Yeah. I can't believe you lost 4-0 to the Flyers. Yeah. Okay, so I love that.
I said yesterday I was worried about the Flyers.
Mm-hmm.
Torts.
They're good now.
No, they just ruin things.
That's right. Okay, so over in the Kraken Sabres game, I'm going with the Raptors on the spread this evening. They're 7.5-point favorites over the Hornets on home court. There is a lot of noise around the Toronto Raptors, a lot, specifically Fred VanVleet, Scotty Barnes, what's going to happen with Gary Trent Jr.? Is this team going in the right direction? Which direction are they going in general? I think that tonight is a really big game in terms of building some momentum. They put a good performance together the last time that they are on home court. I think that this is step two of showing that this team can play as a team, that maybe the tension that we're seeing or feeling was just a blip. And I just want them to make a pathway, whichever way it is. And I hope it's in one direction. So I'd like them to win by 7.5 at a bare minimum tonight against a team that is just not good.
Yeah, unfortunately, a big win doesn't classify as a big win. Like, it'd be, obviously, we want them to cover the spread. It's your pick.
The Hornets are 11 and 30.
It's just really hard to glean anything like real from a win over the Hornets.
So put some wins together. They play them again Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, it's the problem. Like, if you lose one of these games against the Hornets, it's like, that was a crappy week. Like,
it's
you have to win both these games and we'll see what they do. We do have player props for it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, you know, the Pascal's at around 25 points, Fred's at 19.5. You don't know when it's the Hornets. Like, if it's a good opponent, they're going to have to play well. The ball's going to have to run through Siakam. You might be more inclined to take an over on Pascal Siakam, but it could be a night where he has to basically never take it out of third gear, and you don't know if he has to hit that point total. Maybe he's dishing the ball a little bit more. Can we count on a good Fred shooting night? I'm not sure that we're there yet, even though we had a little bit of a cathartic moment at the end of the last game in the win over the Trailblazers. Just not sure we can count on anyone in particular. So I think it's the best just to go with the spread and hope the Raptors take care of business tonight.
Especially because if they are taking care of business, their bench looked pretty great in comparison in their last showing. So, you know, it's tough sometimes if they're up.
Give me a Jeff Doughton over tonight.
I wish I could find point props on him. Okay, so Raptors on the spread for me tonight. Let's run through our Wake and Rake suggestions before you lock in our anchor. Good morning, Rakers. In order to win, you have to lose. I was taught well last night. I'm back on Buffalo and Seattle for over 6.5. There you go. Anytime goal scorers, of course. Tage Thompson plus 115. Daniel Sprong, which is just one of my favorite names in the league right now, as a power play point at plus 350. And this is our power play point guy, of course, Adam the Truck. Last night was an oddity, and the net will be filled up tonight. Let's go, Buffalo.
Eli Tolvanen. I don't know if I say his name, the first name right. Tolvanen for Seattle, a pickup, a waiver pickup from Nashville. He's on a heater right now. Only plus 325 anytime score, But this guy, since he got picked up, seems to contribute every single game. So maybe there's one.
Interesting.
One other one to lean into.
Lots of eyes on Buffalo, Seattle tonight.
Yeah. Well, it seems to be not Seattle as much, but Buffalo is one of our teams. Maybe a Hall of Fame team by the end of the year.
I kind of want them to squeak their way into some meaningful games here. Okay. Getting my wraps, Wake and Rake picks in early because I'm always listening but always busy at work. Hornets are slumping right now, but there's no value in the spread or money line with the Raptors' play of late. I like the old reliable OG over steals and blocks. Scotty Barnes is looking to shut out the noise. That's right. And go over 27 points, assists, and rebounds. Malcolm in Niagara. Malcolm has never texted in before. Welcome, Malcolm.
OG.
Used to be our old faithful, Justin.
And he's hit that mark in four of the last four games. So mm-hmm. his four straight games where he's cleared that. His last game out against Portland, four steals and a block. The steal numbers are on the rise again after a little bit of an outage there. I guess we went away from it. Maybe we shouldn't have. I mean, it looks like he's been hitting that number with pretty much consistent regularity. So it's a Hall of Fame selection, and I don't mind going to it.
Okay. A couple more here. Ron and Juliana and Markham. Good morning. Julius Randle hit for us with ease yesterday, getting 16 rebounds. Let's see if we can continue our hot streak with the Raptors today. The Raptors are playing the lowly Hornets, and although the records aren't that much different, I think the Raptors are a better team. Take the Raptors -6.5. So I liked -6.5. It's now at -7.5. I might just go back to what it was, but anyway, rude. Jules is excited with the possibility of a Steph Curry return tonight. They're playing the Devin Booker-less Suns, who have been horrible without him. She says, take Warriors -4.5 at home, and hopefully they welcome back Curry.
I think this line changed, too, because the last I saw it, it was big, big, big favorites for the Golden State Warriors, now at 11.5 over Phoenix.
Oh, my God, 11.5. So maybe that means Curry's playing.
It may.
Okay, so yeah, because he said Warriors -4.5, things have certainly changed. That's Ron and Juliana and Markham. Okay, Eric in Burlington wrote us a novel. Good morning, Eric in Burlington. Classic college football. Hand up, I did not see the score being 65-7. Same. Congrats to Justin for calling the over. That's about all we got right other than the Bulldogs winning. You know what I did see coming? Montreal being bad all day, every day. But tonight I am sad. No Montreal. What's my lock? I guess I should keep betting on bad teams to be bad. Give me the over tonight in the Sharks and Coyotes. Both teams have struggled scoring, but they are both near the bottom of the league in save percentage and goals against average. I believe it will be the Softies galore tonight. I also like that pick. Also interesting pickup by the Jays last night. Belt is another lefty that can get a lot of at-bats.
Blue Jays analysis. I like it.
At DH, especially if they run into injury trouble. 29 home runs 2 years ago is hard to pass up. Reminds me of the Semien signing in 2021, just for half the price. It's almost 1 month until pitchers and catchers report I missed my baseball.
Okay, so earmark Brandon Belt for a massive, massive contract with the Texas Rangers in a year.
I did hear that he's a great locker room guy, and so is Semien. So there's another parallel.
There we go. Okay.
Okay, so I basically think that you said Sharks and Coyotes on
Sharks
the over.
Sharks and Coyotes over 6.5. I have it -105.
Okay.
Carl Vimelka just gives me the worries.
Okay. Corey in Port Hope for our last two more here. Allie in Toronto. My Wake and Rake anchor is Sabres and Kraken over 6.5. Seattle's on a roll and Buffalo should bounce back after being shut out. Let's do the damn thing. Well, there's another one for you, Justin.
There it is.
And finally, Corey in Port Hope. Good morning. I usually don't go to basketball for my Wake and Rake, but that's where I'm headed tonight. I like the storyline of Scotty Barnes having another solid game and a solid one against Portland. I'll take Barnes over points, assists, and rebounds as well. So we have two for that.
We have two at Barnes?
Yep. We have two at Barnes.
Wow.
Our buddy Malcolm in Niagara. So I feel like we could do a little double pick.
Okay. So, yeah, is it a Barnes night for us? I mean, there haven't been that many Barnes nights, but, you know, against a lesser competition. In more favorable minutes, I'll put it, that's when Scotty Barnes has Sean. I am a little concerned about getting too excited about Scotty Barnes because he's let us down a lot this year. But if that's the double,
it's the double anchor.
That's the double anchor.
And the rest were loving your Buffalo and Seattle over a couple player specific props from hockey, which I'm not sure we're going to put in the Wake and Rake. So I think we're going to do it. Barnes over 27.5 points, assists, and rebounds, a joint selection from Corey and our new texter, our buddy from Niagara, Malcolm. So putting that together in our Wake and Rake, we've got over in the Kraken Sabres game at 6.5, Raptors on the spread and the Barnes over points assists rebounds altogether is plus 498. A petite wake and rake tonight, but let's get going. Let's get some wins.
Where do we lose the value there?
We lost the value. I'm not sure.
Barnes must be juiced to the
Barnes
over.
Barnes is minus 112. Raptors on the spread is minus 110. So I'm not sure how the math works out there. The math ain't mathing, but
okay. Nonetheless,
plus 498.
Won't argue with it.
We won't argue with it. All right. Thanks for sending in your wake and rake picks. As always, we love it. And we will lock that in. Charlotte Hornets on a two-game homestand here against the Raptors.
How do you think they spend their free time in Toronto?
I was
this
just
week?
Thinking about that. I don't think they're going up the CN Tower.
If you could send them anywhere, where would you send them, Ailish?
Go to Rec Room and play
Rec Room.
That shooting hoops game, and then you'll get totally off your rhythm because I'm sure the ball or something's different. And then you come in and you just lay an egg tonight.
That's the secret sauce for the Raptors. Send the opponent to a Rec Room.
All right. Thanks for listening this morning on the Fan Morning Show. We'll be back tomorrow morning. And that was Justin and Ailish. Have a great Tuesday.